Hey, this is John Lee Dumas from EO Fire, and you're listening to Elective Rotation with Pharmacy Joe. You must be prepared to ignite.
What's up, Pharmacy Nation? I'm Pharmacy Joe. Thank you for listening to the Elective Rotation, a critical care pharmacy podcast. This is episode 17, When to IV Push Alteplase for Massive Pulmonary Embolism. If you find this podcast helpful, please tell a friend or colleague about it, or send them the link to the show notes for this episode at pharmacyjoe.com/episode17. As usual, I have all the evidence supporting today's show linked up in the show notes. Have you already joined the Pharmacy Nation Slack group to collaborate and communicate with other pharmacists in real time? If not, send yourself an invite at pharmacynation.org. In this episode, I'll cover when, why, and how to give alteplase for massive pulmonary embolism. I'll also touch on bleeding risk and whether to stop or continue the heparin infusion while you give the alteplase. First, let's define massive pulmonary embolism. Massive PE is present when a patient has an acute PE and hypotension, profound bradycardia, or cardiac arrest. So when do we give these patients alteplase? There is broad agreement among experts to administer alteplase in the setting of massive PE, and it makes good sense considering the pathophysiology. The clot has to go for oxygenation to return. Antithrombotics like heparin or enoxaparin aren't going to do a thing to the existing clot. They will just prevent the clot from getting bigger. The specific CHEST guideline statement is, in patients with acute pulmonary embolism associated with hypotension, like a systolic blood pressure less than 90, who do not have a high bleeding risk, we suggest systemically administered thrombolytic therapy over no such therapy. And CHEST gives this a grade 2C recommendation, which is their lowest level of evidence. We'll get to that in a moment. I am going to be referencing the CHEST guidelines a lot. I really like the CHEST guidelines, especially their latest update, 2012. They do a very nice job of taking the evidence, and they really match it up with the appropriate grading levels. They don't overstate the recommendations. If it's not a grade 1A recommendation, then they are not going to be giving a grade 1A recommendation. And really, in the 2012 guidelines, they really cleaned up a lot of their recommendations that they had gone a little overboard on. So why is alteplase given in massive PE? Well, the hope is that mortality will be decreased by lysing the clot. And in the 2012 CHEST guidelines, the authors note there is only a trend pointing towards a mortality benefit with lytic therapy. Now, since the publication of those guidelines, there has been a meta-analysis which does point to an association with lower all-cause mortality with lytic therapy, and I do have that linked in the show notes. However, the wide range of patient groups and treatments in this meta-analysis leaves many unanswered questions. Even though the available evidence is less than ideal, I doubt further trials will compare lytic therapy to placebo in massive PE, given the clear pathophysiology and rationale for lytics. As the CHEST guidelines state, patients with the most severe presentations who have the highest risk of dying from an acute PE have the most to gain from thrombolytics. Now, plenty of soft endpoints are improved after alteplase is given for massive PE. Clot lysis is accelerated, and there is early hemodynamic improvement. For example, improved pulmonary arterial blood pressure, improved right ventricular function, and pulmonary perfusion. There is, as you would expect, an increased risk of major hemorrhage. In most cases, thrombolytic therapy should be considered only after acute PE has been confirmed because the bleeding events after thrombolytic therapy can be severe. just as an aside, not 2 days ago, we had a patient in our ICU, and we were debating whether or not they had a PE. There was some diagnostic uncertainty with this patient, but they had a history that matched. They were in cardiogenic shock, and it was some time before the decision was made, before they were given alteplase. And I had left, but my resident Jill had stayed, and she was able to see within 10 minutes of the alteplase being infused. We were doing 100 milligrams over 2 hours. The patient's SATs came up. Their blood pressure was better. They were on two pressors prior to. They were able to be weaned off the two pressors quite rapidly, and the patient appeared more alert just a very few minutes after the infusion was begun. So that leads into how to give alteplase for massive PE. There are three options for alteplase administration in massive PE, and they are catheter-directed therapy, IV push administration, or IV infusions. Now, first, catheter-directed therapy. For massive PE, this is not a first-line option, and it would only be used for patients who do not have a low bleeding risk but still appear to need lytic therapy. And even then, it's debatable whether you're changing the bleeding risk. There's not really evidence for that. Catheter-directed therapy involves infusing alteplase into the pulmonary artery at a rate of anywhere from half to 2 milligrams an hour. And an ultrasound device may be used to assist in the delivery of alteplase, with the ultrasound creating additional surface area on the clot for the alteplase to lyse. Another role for catheter-directed lytic therapy in massive PE would be as a rescue therapy if systemic thrombolytics have failed. So the next way to give alteplase for massive PE is IV push. If a patient with an acute PE appears to have an imminent cardiac arrest or has already arrested, alteplase should be given IV push. CHEST guidelines specifically state this, so you can be confident you are not out on a limb if this is being ordered. IV push alteplase is always a disturbing thought for pharmacists, but remember the pathophysiology. If the clot doesn't go away, the patient will not get any oxygen. It's not going to matter if you're giving high-quality chest compressions during the code to this patient, because they're still not going to oxygenate until something happens to that clot. And the only something we can do to it is attempt to lyse it with a thrombolytic. Now, another comforting thought is that it's the longer infusion times that are associated with higher bleeding risk compared to shorter infusion times. Now, whether this translates to IV push, the shortest of all infusions, there's no evidence for that. But that is the way the trend goes as far as the length of infusion and its relation to bleeding risk. And now there have been case reports and series, I have some linked up in the show notes, that have reported success from systemic thrombolytic therapy during cardiopulmonary resuscitation when the cardiac arrest is due to suspected or confirmed acute PE. And in the Slack group that I've created, or again, you can sign up at pharmacynation.org. In that group, we did have a nice discussion about giving TPA IV push. Some people haven't done it. Some people have. And then we kind of discussed there, how have the patients done. So I really encourage you to sign up and join in that discussion in the Slack group. So the last, but really the most common way to give alteplase for massive PE is by IV infusion. So this is for when your patient has a pulse and has a low bleeding risk, then IV infusion is the way alteplase should be given. I typically use 100 milligrams IV over 2 hours, but there have been additional studies suggesting that 50 milligrams IV over 15 minutes is just as safe and effective. The CHEST guidelines note that the 100 milligram over 2 hour regimen has been studied more extensively. Now, on to the bleeding risk. Robust data on bleeding risk is lacking, but there was a review published this year that I have in the show notes. The CHEST authors assume that the bleeding risk with thrombolytic therapy is similar in patients with PE as with acute ST segment elevation MI. Now, this puts the risk of intracranial hemorrhage at about 1% or less. Other serious types of bleeds are more common, but because the risk of intracranial hemorrhage is so much lower than when alteplase is given for stroke, most clinicians I've talked to agree that patients who received alteplase for PE do not need the same type of neurologic monitoring as those who received it for stroke. So you're left with, what are you going to do with a heparin infusion while you're giving the alteplase? Because most of your patients with massive PE have been started on heparin before the decision to give thrombolytics has been made. Now, the CHEST guidelines cover this very well. They say it is acceptable to either continue or suspend the heparin infusion during administration of thrombolytic therapy. These two practices have never been compared. During a two-hour infusion of 100 milligrams of alteplase, U.S. regulatory bodies recommend suspension of the IV heparin, whereas IV heparin is actually continued during the alteplase infusion in many other countries. U.S. authorities recommend checking the APTT immediately after completion of the alteplase infusion, and provided it's not greater than 80, restarting the heparin without a bolus at the same infusion rate as before alteplase was started. Now, the CHEST guidelines don't cover what if you had just given the patient Lovenox, and this has not come up for me personally, but if they need thrombolytics, they need thrombolytics. And so I'm going to take what the CHEST guidelines said about some areas continuing the heparin drip. I'm going to take that to mean that if you need to give alteplase when you had recently given an enoxaparin, if it's massive PE, then you just got to give the alteplase. Now, usually, after I inform the physician of the statement in the CHEST guidelines regarding the heparin infusion, they just make the decision to hold the heparin infusion while the alteplase is running. I'd love to hear from you. What has your experience been giving alteplase for massive PE? Send me an email, joe@pharmacyjoe.com, tweet using the hashtag RxJ17, or join us in the Slack group at pharmacynation.org. If you enjoyed this episode, I'd love your help getting the word out about this podcast. The best way for you to do so is to tell a friend or colleague about the show, or send them a link to the show notes page at pharmacyjoe.com/episode17. And if you have a moment, I'd really appreciate if you leave an honest review on iTunes by going to pharmacyjoe.com/iTunes. Thank you so much for listening. I'll see you in the next episode of the Elective Rotation.